In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. With the U.S. troop exit from Afghanistan and the 20th year anniversary of 9/11, we continue our series of conversations with Iowa veterans who have served a tour of duty in that country, sometimes multiple tours of duty in Afghanistan, over the approximately 20-year course of that war. Our goal in this series is to focus on the individual experiences and challenges of Iowans who did all kinds of work in Afghanistan over the course of the war. You know that by listening to this series, in the service of our country. If you served in Afghanistan or you know someone who did and they might like to share that experience, you can always email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. My guest today is Samuel Braun. Sam Braun is a combat veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan. He's now in his mid-30s, and he's a site supervisor at Allied Universal Security Services. He left active duty, which started in 2009. He left active duty in 2015 as an Army sergeant. He was deployed in Iraq in 2009 and 2010, in Afghanistan in 2014. He grew up in Columbus Junction, currently lives in Ainsworth, and he's a graduate of the University of Iowa. Sam Braun, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is interesting. I have to ask you, first of all, the bridge to getting into the military. You're a graduate of the University of Iowa in political science. Take me from that that field to getting into the military. Not a normal path.
Yeah, it was really something I had always wanted to do. Coming out of college in 2008, the job market, not only here in Iowa, but pretty much across the country, wasn't great in terms of prospective jobs. So one of the reasons necessarily, though, that I joined, was the job market. I don't think the United States government's ever going to go under at any time or ever. So there was a good amount of job security. But the more important part about that, though, was, having wanted to do this when I was 18. So at 23, getting out of college, it was a good move.
Mm-hmm. And I understand your family has a long military tradition.
Yeah, both my grandfathers had served in the military. Uncle also had served in the Army. But can trace my family lineage all the way back to the Civil War. Clear back to that point, there's always been at least someone in the family, though, that was serving in the military, predominantly in the United States Army.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Do you happen to know the name of your ancestor that served in the Civil War?
Yeah, his name was William Henry Harrison Reddick. He was the sixth man of the first group of Union soldiers to actually earn the Medal of Honor from President Lincoln, 1863. A certain degree, obviously, of that lineage goes all the way back to that.
Amazing. That's quite a heritage. And was he in Iowa at that time?
He actually was not. He was in Indiana at the time, though. I believe Indiana Volunteers, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm, okay. And that played a part in your decision to enter the military as well, I would understand it.
Yeah. The family has been, Army since the Civil War. And then, of course, felt to a certain extent, obviously, not necessarily had to live up to earning my own Medal of Honor, but definitely kind of predetermined as to which branch I was going to join.
Mm-hmm. So take us right to Afghanistan, since that's the focus of this series.
Mm-hmm.
2014, it's been a few years, you were back from Iraq now a few years, had those experiences, take us to Afghanistan and the nature of your mission there. What, you are an Army sergeant at this point,
at this time I was just a specialist, which, you know, is basically a step below in terms of rank. But February of 2014, we were set to go, and of course, as with all deployments, you know, there's several groups, your main bodies, I guess, is what they call them as you move overseas, and fill in then to the position. So what the nature of the mission at the time, or at least what was explained to us, obviously, was, you know, to begin the transitioning process from U.S. troops leaving that combat role and stepping into more of an assistance and advisory role. And that was essentially what our job was, to facilitate the transition of our area of operations over to the Afghan National Army, as well as their national police forces.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me what that looks like on a day-to-day, your day-to-day duties, your missions. What were you doing?
Well, it kind of became a multi-faceted job. Originally, when we were there, of course, it was to make the introductions between our officers that were coming into country and those that were exiting country. So it was was the first part of the actual operation itself. So we would be going, usually sometime during the day, early in the morning, late in the afternoon, depending on when the Afghan government officials would have time for us. So we'd load up in a truck as a convoy type of thing. Move from our facility to wherever we happened to be going, whether that was the governor's house or an actual ANA or Afghan National Army going to their post. That would be, a typical day that we'd be working on our truck all day to get everything ready for, a 10-minute drive over to wherever we were going. Then several hours with them, and then roll back to our base. The operation later on changed, where we stopped going to their locations. And most of those days, I would spend in the tactical operations center, where we'd be looking at maps and planning things, et cetera, whatever they needed us to do. And then later on, that transitioned again to where we started going back out on trucks, out on missions and things of that sort. So I did a fair amount of different things throughout the time that I spent in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you set out on these missions to meet members of the Afghan National Army.
Mm-hmm.
When you set out for them, they're ready to receive you. What are you thinking? What are you trying to ascertain? Either you already know, or you want to ascertain upon your arrival, how much danger, how many question marks are there in your mind when you set out on one of these things typically?
Well, having been already in Iraq and done a lot of these missions, a lot of the question marks were, a lot of the blanks or whatever were filled in. There is always the possibility, as you're rolling along, obviously they hit an IED or mine or something, to the effect of that. Or just some crazy guy start shooting at you as you're rolling, down the street. So those things are always in the back of your mind, but you kind of shove those aside, focus on what you've got to do, what the mission is. There's always, of course, a briefing before it or beforehand. And so you just put those things out of your mind and focus on what you got to do, the mission, and then the overall objective of that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 4 days, 5 days, that plan or that overarching idea that you're trying to get across becomes very much so the big picture, I guess, though, is the main idea that you want to make that bridge, you want to build that relationship so that if and when things do get bad, you can at least hopefully rely on these people.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you were special in your unit because you had intensively studied the native language, and that made a real difference in these contacts with Afghan leaders.
Sure, it sure did. I took I believe it was a 16-week course and then an 8-week advanced course. So I was able to, you know, as far as my ability, I was able to listen, kind of interpret for the officers, you know, specifically what was said. Now, we did have people, obviously, though, interpreted that were actual native speakers of the language. Not, you know, kind of to be a truth detector of, you know, well, is that really what they said? or are they just kind of coming up with stuff? Yeah. You know, there was always that aspect. Now, I was fairly proficient in Dari, which was one of the two languages that were primarily spoken in Afghanistan, the other being Pashto. We had people that took the Pashto course, and we had people that took the Dari course. So we always would roll out with one of those other people that spoke one language or the other.
Mm-hmm. I bet you there were instances when you, as a white Iowan American, surprised the people you're sitting across when they did you reveal that you could speak Dari or Pashto?
I was not supposed to, but there was a particular instance where we were with the Afghan National Army, and the gentleman was speaking. He was trying to tell a joke. He spoke some English, but not enough necessarily, though, that you would understand what he was saying. Mm-hmm. But anyways, he got to the end of the joke and the punchline and everything, and I started laughing because I understood what he was saying. The American officers looked at me like, why are you laughing? You know, what was so funny about this? And so I explained it to him in English. Of course, it's much funnier in the actual Afghan. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense in English.
Mm. Do you remember the joke?
I don't exactly, because it to be perfectly honest, it really isn't that funny. But it is, and it's funny. It's much funnier if you understand Afghan culture, though.
Right.
As to why it's funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was another part of the language training that we took. Also, every day we would have a cultural hour where we would learn something about Afghanistan from the people themselves that had grown up there, or had lived there, worked there, that had at least at this point made it to the United States.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, my guest is Sam Braun, an Iowan, also a combat veteran of both Iraq, where he served in 2009 and 2010, and Afghanistan. He's just been talking about that deployment. He was there in 2014. So most of these outings were successful in trying to reach your goals with the Afghan National Army leaders?
Yeah, every mission that we went out on, had a different, where we would go and meet different people, it tended to be the officers that were exiting the country, had forged an X number of months relationship with whoever the Afghan person was, it was basically to introduce these new officers, in this case, our unit's officers, to these people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also later on had a vice versa relationship where they would come to our facility, our FOB, would hang out and talk with us, or talk with our officers once again at our quote-unquote home, try to foster that relationship even more of good friends, trust, relationship, yeah. You know, we're here to help you kind of situation. That was the kind of the focus necessarily when we first got there, and then later on the focus moved more to just kind of a presence felt type of situation.
In your encounters with the Afghan people, not necessarily the leaders, but perhaps also the leaders, mm-hmm. You just spoke of trust. Did you always know you could trust people? Was that, it would seem to me your radar is always up. You're looking for cues that maybe you couldn't trust this person, and you need to be aware of that.
Yeah, if you completely relied on ANA, Afghan FPs, you know, whoever, whatever it happened to be, you really couldn't. To be perfectly honest, you could rely, you could trust on, you could put your trust, obviously, though, in yourself, possibly in your God, but also with the other men you served with. However, serving from, you know, in a foreign country, with foreign troops and such, you can't necessarily 100% trust them.
And did you have an instance where the trust was broken, where it turned out that there was someone who had other loyalties?
Well, not necessarily other loyalties, but it would tend to be that, you know, we would show them something and then go on an operation and they wouldn't show up or, you know, and just not tell us that they weren't coming or we'd be all set, ready to go, and they'd go in and you know, kind of do the operation the way it was supposed to be done. But we literally may have just shown them how to do it. And they didn't do it. So we would have instances necessarily like that. I can't say too much necessarily more than that, though, as a operational security type of thing, though.
Right. Did you feel you came to, I suppose over time, understand where they're coming from through experience rather than the briefings before?
Yeah. Some of the things necessarily they would be saying, I would be listening. To you know what they were talking about, to a certain amount they would use a fair amount of slang. So I was able to get the gist of what they were saying, but not necessarily maybe word for word. It is a little harder to figure out necessarily though what their motivations are. They have many reasons. They could have many reasons for what they're doing. They could have maybe one reason for what they're doing. But necessarily 100%, once again, 100%, no. Like I can't say that I know 100% necessarily where they were coming from.
Mm-hmm. So interesting that you spoke enough Dari, their native language, to connect with them on that level and get some of the nuances there. Do you have I'm just interested, I've never heard Dari.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a phrase or something you could share just so we could hear what it sounds like?
Yeah, basically, Ayatu Dari Gofti, and that would be, do you speak Dari?
Mm-hmm.
So I
want to say no, so I say.
So you would say no, actually, because that word is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You may ask Chitor Gofti, and that's, how are you feeling? And then you would answer something like, Kub Astam Tashakur Washuma. Would be, I'm fine, how are you? You would learn that some of these phrases, not that it necessarily came in handy, here in Iowa, as not too many people, speak Dari here in Iowa. But just so some of those things, obviously, though, are still ingrained, into your memory.
Mm-hmm.
Because you did it every single day.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of those things, still somewhat remember some of them.
Okay. Sam Braun, my guest, if you've just joined us, a combat veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq, also a native Iowan. Sam, I wonder if you can tell me about a day in Afghanistan when you encountered some real danger in combat.
Sure. There was a particular day where we had a convoy from one of our companies did actually end up getting ambushed where they actually struck an IED and then were pinned down and engaged in combat. They at the time we were hanging out around. They rounded basically though us up, obviously though, as a QRF, which is known as a quick reaction force. So we spun up our trucks, got everything ready to go, and then rolled out there. Now, when we got there, they were basically I'm going to say clean up, obviously, though everything that was kind of left. We basically had to, take up a perimeter and hang around necessarily, though, for groups to reinforce, obviously, make sure, obviously, we got all of our guys out. Mm-hmm. Well, as we were, hanging out there, we were taking sporadic machine gun fire, and we couldn't figure out where it was coming from. We ended up getting a couple of helicopters, actually, in the air, and they, from the air, anyways, were able to locate where this was at, and then they, took their shots, obviously, and destroyed this enemy area. So that was, one of the situations, especially in Afghanistan, that we encountered, was oftentimes we would kind of know where maybe enemy fire was coming from, yeah. But you didn't necessarily always know 100%.
In that instance, were there U.S. casualties?
There was, but not the casualties themselves obviously came from the company that got ambushed, not the actual unit, though, that I rolled out with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In these firefights, did you, perhaps in this or others, do you have to shoot someone, take aim?
Yeah. I mean, you do end up sending fire back downrange. Now, do you know if you hit somebody or something? Maybe, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, you're engaged in a situation you may or may not know that you actually hit somebody or something, in terms of distance and such. But you got to be 100% sure of what you're shooting at before you make that decision, necessarily to send a bullet back downrange. That's just the smart thing to do, though.
Right. There's always this moment. Maybe it's a Hollywood moment. Maybe it's for real. And maybe this happened to you in your earlier deployment in Iraq, the first time you have to pull the trigger and you have your sights on an enemy.
Yeah, it's kind of a surreal moment, but if you do end up in a situation as there where you had to employ your weapon, I guess make that decision to squeeze down on that trigger, you got to make sure obviously that you can make it. If you hesitate for a moment, that could be the difference between life and death, not only for you, but possibly for that enemy.
Sam Braun is my guest, a combat veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk with Sam more about his military experiences, his two deployments in Afghanistan and earlier in Iraq. In Iraq, he was there in 2009 and 2010, in Afghanistan in 2014. He's back in Iowa now, and we'll talk about that transition from the kind of atmosphere that he just described back to civilian life and then going back into a theater of war. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.
The way you get your news may have changed during this pandemic, but you still need to know what's going on in our state every day. Iowa Public Radio News has you covered. Subscribe to our new podcast, Hear First, and start your day equipped with the essential local news you need to know, delivered in under 15 minutes, weekdays by 7 a.m. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters, learn about what's going on at the Statehouse and on the ground in your community. Subscribe to Hear First today wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guest, Sam Braun. He's a combat veteran of both Afghanistan and Iraq. He was in Iraq in 2009 and 2010 and in Afghanistan in 2014. He left active duty in 2015 as an Army sergeant, and we're so glad to have him with us. Grew up in Columbus Junction, lives now in Ainsworth, graduate of the University of Iowa. Sam, I want you to talk a little bit, since we've spoke a lot about your deployment in Afghanistan. Let's talk about your first deployment in Iraq a little bit. What was the nature of that? How were those duties, that mission, different?
Well, that mission was definitely different. At the time, I had just gotten out of it had been about a month or so, but I had gone to basic, went to airborne school, then got assigned to the 10th Mountain Division, upstate New York. The situation itself, going from Iowa farm kid, all the way out to New York, it was a different world, a different experience altogether. Just going there, but I was only with my unit for a short amount of time. I believe about 3 weeks, and then you're going to Iraq. I was kind of dumbfounded. I was like, "This is crazy." Mm-hmm. I had expected to do some training, prior to this, but it was hey, you're going. Not really necessarily, still pretty green, I guess. By the time I got over there, didn't know anybody in the unit. Nobody in the unit knew me. Once we did, end up going over there, we would basically go on a 6-day rotation where we'd be hanging out in some towers. The next day we'd be on quick reaction. Then the next day we might be, doing a nighttime operation of just either presence felt or a route clearance or some other type of operation. It would vary from day to day as to what we would actually be doing over the course of the next 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never knew though what necessarily would be happening, but there was at least an overall plan to close down the facility we were at and hand that over to the Iraqis. And that was, primarily speaking, the goal of what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. And an instance from Iraq when you got into a sticky situation?
There was a couple instances necessarily in Iraq where we would, run into to something like that. But the facility that we were first at was, extremely remote area. It didn't even have a name necessarily as to what it was. But there'd be, a couple nights, obviously, where rockets or mortars, might fly over the base or over the it wasn't really a base, I guess, the area necessarily, though, that we were at. And if those would happen to possibly fly or land over, somewhere off in the distance or something like that, everyone would have to get up and we'd have to call in some air cover or something like that. And so we'd just kind of stand around for a while. One night after a particular election that they had, we were out just running around, doing what soldiers do. All of a sudden we start hearing some mortars, being fired. Coming near our location, we happen to be out on a fairly open area, so these mortars, we start hearing them and they start blowing up, fairly close to us. I'd say probably a solid 100 meters, past the point necessarily where we're. So definitely overshooting, but when you're out there in PTs, you don't have any a huge amount of protection.
PTs are
physical training. Basically, it's a shorts and T-shirt.
I see.
Is basically
you're not suited up for combat.
Yeah, we weren't ready to go or anything like that. But we did have some metal protector. Part of it's glass, part of it's metal that we were actually able to take some cover behind. And so nobody got hurt or anything like that. It just ended up obviously being, obviously someone was probably upset about their candidate losing, their election or whatever, what have you. That was an instance necessarily where it's like, hey, people are trying to kill me. And that was the very first combat experience, though, that I ever had. Basically, at that point then, as soon as it was over, you ran back and suited up, obviously, to go out. and go and try and find the people necessarily though that did this. We found their equipment, but we never found them specifically. There was suspects, yeah. That were unfortunate enough necessarily to be in the area. So we would round those guys up. Presumably speaking, these were the guys that did it. They got back, they're interrogated, and then of course if they were innocent of any crimes and such, they would be released. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about returning to the U.S. after those two deployments, if we could, Sam. You returned from Iraq in 2010, from Afghanistan in 2014. What are the challenges that you face returning? What was sort of like, was it kind of a wow experience returning to civilian life and how different it is and how perhaps you had changed?
Yeah, definitely a different world when you come back, that time obviously has not stopped. So every single person, has still lived their life. You lived in country in an enemy country or friendly country or whatever however you characterize it, for several months, and then of course you return back to the U.S. and back to your regular, to a certain extent, a regular life, and that's very different. The weather itself is totally different. It's not 120 degrees every day here. There's
in some parts of the U.S.
Out west, I think I'd feel right at home. There's the rolling plains necessarily see here. Over there, mountains all over the place.
Yeah.
Snow-capped peaks and stuff like that. Coming from a farm. Here in Iowa, over to mountains in Afghanistan, just completely different world.
What about your behavior? What did you realize about even walking down the street, going shopping? Was that different?
Oh yeah, shopping was definitely different. You don't shop in enemy countries or anything like that. I could be walking down the street still be checking rooftops. For snipers or something like that, constantly looking up, kind of a constant state of suspicious awareness of what's going on to your left, your right, above, behind, and then of course what's directly in front of you. Rolling down the street and you happen to see a trash bag or something on the side of the road, you think, oh, might be a bomb in that,
Yeah.
Clearly, there probably isn't, but there's always the possibility of, and so those things you try to break yourself necessarily of those things, it always necessarily seems to be with you.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this, a new report on when we talk about sort of the mental challenges of coming back. You're certainly aware of this, I'm sure. U.S. military deaths. This stark statistic, an estimated, it's over 7,000 service members have died during the military operation since 9/11. Suicides, though, among active duty personnel and veterans of the conflicts, both Iraq and Afghanistan, have reached 30,000, over 30,000. So that's four times as many active duty personnel and veterans dying by suicide as actually died in combat in operation since 9/11. Is that something that makes sense to you? It's just mind-blowing to me.
Well, to a certain extent, the ability of a person necessarily to cope obviously with the situation they were in, what they did, what had to be done, those certain things, obviously, that can really mess with a person. Individually, I think each person has to square what they had to do, what they did, all these other things. They have to square that, not only with themselves, but, with their God, if they're a religious person, or, whoever necessarily, though, that they maybe have a supreme being type of thing or whatever. However they have to cope with what they had to do. I think each person has to do that, you know, for themselves. Now, as a caveat to that for myself, I didn't necessarily have much qualms necessarily about what we had to do, what, you know, we were asked to do, all the other things necessarily that that we did. I did not have qualms about it at all. When I came back, that, you know, or when let's say you were in a combat situation and then it's over, you know, at that point you have some time, usually you take some time, obviously, to come to, you know, to terms with what you did. Some people don't have the ability to do that. Some guys came back and they were really messed up from Iraq and Afghanistan, and then possibly, you know, an entirely different experience that they had as opposed to what I had.
And people you knew close to you.
Yeah, I mean, not only when we were in country did we have, you know, people that prior to going over were already kind of a little on edge. When we came back, everyone was too. Because it does change necessarily just your psyche, I guess, though, about the world in general more than just anything specific.
Is there a kernel, a core that you had to wrestle with more than other aspects? Or sounds like a well-adjusted Sam Braun that I'm listening to was kind of built for this and able to cope with it and go in country and then back to your homeland? Or were there days when you just struggled and you were in a very dark place?
There was never necessarily anything that I, in particular, necessarily noticed. I happened to go down to Nashville a fair amount when I was at Fort Campbell with the 101st, prior to Afghanistan, then after Afghanistan. And several of those people in Nashville said that I had changed somewhat, and, you know, asked in what way. You know, they're like, well, you're kind of darker, you know, a little more, less reserved, I guess, than I was. But then, you know, a couple months later, they said, you're back to the guy that you were, you know, before.
That was probably good. That was good to hear, right?
Yeah, it was good situation necessarily to be in. But individually speaking, I didn't ever felt, obviously, you know, a dark day where I just, you know, sat in my room in the dark and contemplated, you know, the meaning of life or whatever, what have you. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever had a situation necessarily where I was like that. I had great family, obviously, though, that I could talk to if I needed to. Of course, I had many friends, that were there. A lot of the soldiers, that I had gone to war with, were still there, or still, within that unit. And so when you speak with them, they know exactly what you're talking about because they were right next to you. So I had a good conduit, I guess, though, for releasing the stress that I think every single person, has that has been deployed and has come back then.
Mm-hmm. Our time is running out. I'd like to ask you about a couple of other things. Thoughts on the U.S. mission overall over two decades in Afghanistan with the withdrawal of all U.S. troops? Was it worth it? What questions are in your mind?
Let me start obviously saying I'm glad the war is ending. I am. That we're getting out, that our guys are coming back, all those other things. However, if the let's say obviously the Taliban does come back into position, then a lot of the question becomes, well, what did we really accomplish here? What did we really do?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, if they would take over the country and it goes back to what it was, pre 9/11, as not necessarily just as a sanctuary as a whole for Al-Qaeda or other terrorist organizations, to a certain extent, a repressive Taliban regime in charge again.
Mm-hmm.
Then what did we really accomplish? What did we really do? Did we do anything? We had the same situation necessarily with ISIS taking over sections of Syria and Iraq. What did we really end up doing? And then of course having to go back in and assist forces necessarily though to retake parts of the country or fight to win back parts of the country. So the question in my mind is going to be, well, what did we really do?
Yeah.
If we take stock of the past 20 years, hopefully everyone can find something or take some comfort necessarily though, in that we left it in a better situation than it was.
Yeah.
But are we going to do that? Maybe. Maybe not.
Right. Whether we're politically able to do that, whether they have the will to do that, whether
right.
That's a very complicated question. I wonder what your thoughts are specifically about the people of Afghanistan and their future. And we know, the Taliban back in power would mean probably very drastic things, especially for women.
Yes, while we were there, of course, there would be. Afghan school children that would be going from place to place. We were definitely very secluded from the population itself, the people themselves. We had a couple interpreters, but they were fairly westernized. Definitely people that understood Americans or American culture. Not only had they lived it, but they also would probably be coming back to a life in the United States. They just happened to be over in Afghanistan and willing to help us out. Once again, though, there's still a fair amount of interpreters over there or guys that speak the language that are native of that place, though, that did help Americans. Those guys may be ostracized essentially for helping Western troops from either the United States or other Western countries. That also went in.
It sounds like maybe positive. Is positive the right word to? It sounds like you had a positive experience in both Afghanistan and Iraq. And maybe that's a strange word. Maybe that's an inappropriate word.
No, I'd say positive experience as a whole, not only just in theater, but I think in the military as a whole.
Mm.
There was never experiences necessarily that I had in the military that were completely, catastrophically bad. There was never anything like that.
Never wounded.
Never wounded. There was probably a couple times where I could have been. Every once in a while, I was like, oh man, this sucks.
Did you lose someone close to you?
I didn't personally. There were a couple guys I knew. That did die. Prayed obviously for their souls and everything, but at the end of the day, there were guys that lost a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
And those are the guys that those that did die or wounded in action, killed in action. Those guys are the real heroes though, because they did their job. And then of course at the end of the day, it's up to us the living. As President Lincoln so put, to be, fully devoted, to, the last full measure, I guess, though, is definitely what we need to do.
Mm. Given what you've said about your experience there, if you had the opportunity to return to one day or a situation in the military, it sounds like you miss some of that time.
Oh, definitely. The day you get out is probably the hardest day.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had a couple guys obviously tell me that they got out before I did. Like, you're gonna want to go back. You're gonna want to get back in.
That was true.
And that was true. It is definitely true.
So what? Take me back to a day that you miss more than anything right now.
Well, I definitely miss the camaraderie that you had, more than anything. It wasn't necessarily the job itself. It was the camaraderie that you had with the other guys that were in your unit, particular officer or non-commissioned officer or something, just somebody or somebodies that you miss more than anything. The actual job itself, I can't say necessarily I miss all that. Mm. Waking up at 5 in the morning, throwing on all your equipment, and going and walking 12 miles, and you have 3 hours to do it.
In the heat?
In anywhere, actually, whether that's heat, snow. In Drum, it's 9 months winter. Do I really miss that? No. Do I miss actually, though, just sitting around with my buddies, cleaning our weapons and doing whatever? Yeah, just stuff like that, you do end up missing some of that.
Sam Braun grew up in Columbus Junction, lives in Ainsworth, Iowa, two deployments in Iraq in 2009, 2010, and most recently in 2014 in Afghanistan, retired as an Army sergeant, left active duty in 2015. Sam, what a pleasure. Thank you so much. You take care of yourself.
I will, and thank you guys for having me.
This has been part of our series of conversations with Iowa veterans of the Afghanistan War. If you served in Afghanistan, or you know someone who did, and that person might like to share that experience, email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org.